Senate Finance will come to order. Welcome to Senator Bundy, Senator Hoffman, Stedman, Senator Co-Chair Wilkin, myself, Senator Green, as we begin the hearing on a presentation by the Department of Education Commissioner Roger Sampson. Senator Wilkin, do you have any comments, questions, or anything for the good of the order?
No, thank you.
Senator Dyson, welcome. Commish, turn it over to you.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My name is Roger Sampson, Commissioner of Education for the Department of Education and Early Development. I hope to share with you today a concept and a program that I'm very excited about the potential and the impact it can have on students in Alaska. It's titled Alaska School Performance Incentive Program, and clearly this program is about incentivizing for our educators and paying when we can accelerate student learning much more rapidly than currently exists. We're talking about as a program that provides an environment for great student achievement. We're talking about targets being based on growth, which is much different than many other models. And I'm going to talk extensively about why growth and why this is the real leveling factor and balancing factor. It's about providing an opportunity to use the tremendous expertise that exists in our schools today in Alaska. We have some fantastic educators with great skills, innovative ideas, but fostering the environment to have them work together towards a common goal. It's about impacting an entire staff of a building. This is a very different component that I'll speak in detail about. It's not about one teacher versus another. It's about an entire school, an entire staff working together to where they either succeed as a team or they don't hit the mark as a team. It would be available for every school, not just some schools, not just large, not small, not just rural, not urban. It would be available for any school who hits the target. So it's not like grading on a curve. It's grading on a standard. It's based on a reliable tool that's aligned to Alaska's grade level expectations. And it's about building partnerships with both people within the building, outside of the building, and doing things differently than we have done day in and day out over the past decades. This is a program about increasing accountability. The first question that comes to mind is, why have this program? I think there's some real critical needs for a program like this. One, we have to find a way to accelerate student growth and student achievement in this state as we do across the nation. Yes, we've had some great increases in the number of students showing proficiency in reading, writing, and mathematics. But we also know that the bar and the need for students to know more and be able to apply those skills is increasing every single year. So we need a methodology that accelerates this achievement level. We need a way to stimulate the educational system to use a proven private sector practice. Now, not every private sector practice is going to be effective in the public sector. But I absolutely believe that this one does apply, can apply, and of all the private sector practices to induce and stimulate increases in hitting the targets, this is one that's probably been used more in this country than any other particular strategy. It's time that we give this an attempt in the public sector. It will empower schools and give them a reason to work together. And we need to capture that stability that we have in many of our schools that are not certificated teachers. What I'm talking about there is in many of our schools, the great connection between kids and adults might be between a student and an instructional aide, might be between a custodian, it might be between a secretary, and clearly those individuals have a different connection to parents in the community oftentimes than do teachers, and principals. So we need to capture that stability and that great connectivity there and use it in how we accelerate student learning. And finally, we need a program like this because we need to increase the return on Alaska's investment in public education. Benefits to the program. This is my favorite part because the benefits are great. Most importantly, this is a program that if it's not successful for a variety of reasons that I'll talk about, if we're unable to move our students to advanced levels of achievement, then there is no liability or no cost to the state. So it's a no-risk program for the state of Alaska. We need to have the benefits of increasing the number of students that graduate from Alaska schools with the skills that prepares them to transition into the workforce, whether that's vocational training, whether that's post-secondary education. That's a benefit that I think this program will provide. It creates a strong workforce for Alaska, and as we know, we've got many jobs that are not able to be filled by Alaskans right now. Another benefit of this program is it needs to enhance our teacher recruitment effort. We have a national shortage we're looking at. Alaska's not exclusive to that shortage. We have two things that this would provide. One, I think this would help Alaska attract the best and the brightest, while the mentoring program will help us retain the best and the brightest once we acquire them. So I think that's a huge benefit for Alaska. Excuse me. This is a program that links accountability directly to student achievement, something we've not had before. It promotes collaboration, effective instruction, and it spreads, most importantly, it spreads the responsibility for the core foundation contents, reading, writing, and mathematics, across the entire staff. If we look at a typical comprehensive large high school today, we've agreed in this state and across this nation that there's three content areas that are core. Some states agree there's more, but everyone agrees that reading, writing, and mathematics, or the ability to compute, are foundational content areas. All of our students must have those. Right now, we are measuring those on an annual basis. If you look at the comprehensive high school, there's only about 15% of the staff that have direct responsibility for reading, writing, and mathematics. If these are core and foundational, and in fact, the students' ability to be proficient at those has a great impact on their ability to be successful in other content areas, history, sciences, home economics, vocational, a number of those courses, then everybody has to take some responsibility for reading, writing, and mathematics. This program will help create the environment to spread that responsibility across the entire staff, every content area, every grade level. This is a critical component of this proposal and this project. This is about why measure growth and what growth to measure. This is very different than what we put out every year under No Child Left Behind in schools that meet adequate yearly progress. That particular model measures groups of students and not the same group of students. It compares a group of fourth graders from last year to a new group of fourth graders this year. This proposal is about measuring individual student growth, every student in the school, every student in the state, and comparing that growth of that student from current year to previous year. As Alaskans, we expect every student to grow and achieve. Whether they're the lowest performing student or the highest performing student, we expect growth from our kids. We don't want them to become stagnant. That's one thing that NCLB has missed, that kids go off the radar screen once they become proficient. That's not acceptable to Alaskans. We expect growth from all of them. When you look at individual growth, this begins to foster meeting individual needs of kids. When you begin to meet individual needs of kids, you have a whole different level of engagement from that student. When you meet individual needs of students, you see changes in dropout rate, for the better. You see increases in graduation rates because kids begin to understand how they fit into the system and their needs are met. If we don't focus on individual needs of students in this program based on data we get from assessment, then there's no way that the school will be able to meet the performance incentive. So it forces focused instruction. How we're going to measure this growth? Again, it's different than NCLB because we're looking at every student. What we're going to do is compare a student A, for example, how that student did this year compared to the previous year. We're also going to look at how students perform within an entire school. We'll be able to break those groups of students down any way we want with any factors. We could take just a certain grade. We could take certain ethnicity. We could take socioeconomic status because we have the ability with our unique identifier to track those kids anywhere in the state by groups. We can also look, as we're proposing here, how that school as a whole did from one year to the next, working with the same students, not different students. When we measure the same students from one year to another, this is especially important in Alaska because of our small schools. If you don't measure individual students but different groups, you get very distorted results in that, the smaller the school or the more mobile the population. So while the group comparison seems to make sense on a national level, it doesn't make sense many times for Alaska's small schools. And finally, most important part about measuring individual growth is when you measure individual growth, you create an environment for the parent of those children to have a meaningful dialogue with school and school staff about how their child is doing and how to enhance that. On slide number 7, you're looking at a grid that says value table. And this is the core of this whole proposal and model. This is the equalizer, the balancer. This is what makes it fair whether you're in a large school, small school, rural school, urban school, school with high-performing kids, low-performing kids, poor children, wealthy children. There are 6 performance levels that are identified on this value chart, and it may be difficult to read, and there are some abbreviations there. But basically what they stand for, far below proficient minus, far below proficient plus, below proficient minus, below proficient plus, proficient, and advanced. So if you looked at the left-hand side of that grid, the darker shade, it goes from the lowest performing levels working down to the top performing levels. This grid is designed so you can compare the previous year to the current year. And obviously the goal is to take a student wherever they performed the previous year and moving them one or more performance categories up. For a student who was advanced the previous year, it's quite a feat to keep them advanced so they would be awarded or valued by staying advanced. That would be our expectation. This value table is designed so it is not likely that a school could focus on a single group of kids, such as, let's put our attention on the group of students that are currently proficient, and let's try to move all of those students, or a large percentage of those students, to advanced, and not pay attention to the other students. This value table is designed to where, if that approach was taken, they would not be able to reach a performance compensation level. The next 3 slides all look the same, but they're in progression. And the progression, we're going to walk you through one step at a time as we fill in the numbers. The slide you're looking at now, slide number 8, What this represents, we'll call it a school, and it's a school of 10 for computing and example purposes. We are able right now to take every student in Alaska who took the state assessment last April. We would be able to place them in one of six performance categories as we speak today. So let's pretend for example purposes that this is a school of 10 kids, and we are taking those 10 kids, and we're putting their performance level from last year. Go to the next slide. And we've taken those same kids from the same school, and in the next column, we've listed down their current year performance level. So for student A, last year that student was proficient, and for the current year, they made advancement and, in fact, moved to the advanced level of performance. If you look at student D, as in David, that student a year ago was below proficient plus, and, in fact, this year moved backwards to far below proficient plus. That student actually regressed. We have the makings in this matrix now to do that comparison from one year to the next, every student in each school. So if you go to the next page, we have now set up where we've added the points in the final column. And what I'm going to ask you to do, if you have the hard copy, go back to the value table on page 7 so you can hold it next to this index. And what you can see is if you slide on student A, if you go to last year's performance down the left, and you slide down until you get to the proficient box, and then you slide across to the right until you get their current year's performance, which is advanced. And in that box, you should see a value of 130. And you could do that for each of the 10 schools in this example, each of the 10 students in this school. The first thing that you'll note at a quick glance is any time there's a score of less than 100, then that student did not get a full year's worth of growth. If it exceeds 100, you know that there was growth that exceeded a year. And, of course, the higher the number, the more growth that was made. When we have this computed index by school, we go through a mathematical formula that's very simple. We take the total points generated by students in that school and divide it by the number of students in that school, and we get a school score. In this case, it's 103. If you'll go to the next slide, you see four performance levels. And let me first speak about the performance levels as why. We looked at over 20 years of performance models, both in the private sector and in the public sector. Quite frankly, most of them were in the private sector because that's where this model has been used the most. And one of the theories there that they said were very important to making this model successful is you had to have more than one cutoff point or one point of recognition and incentive. Multiple levels generated different levels and more interest by employees to change and shoot for those targets. So this reflects four different compensation levels and performance levels. The second column that says index point value, that represents the school score. So in our example on the previous page, a score for that school of 103 would have met a compensation level. It would have met the first compensation level called strong. If you go to the next slide, this is the performance level incentive values. Two key things on this page. You see two columns there, certified, non-certified. This reflects the value of the compensation based on whether you're certified or whether you're not certificated. Not certificated, secretaries, custodians, oftentimes teacher's aides, and then moving down the page demonstrates the levels of performance. The higher the performance, the higher the compensation. This is always about a balancing act, and this is what the research said on these models, and I know that there are people on this committee that have much more expertise on how it applies to their private sector and models, but the balancing act is always setting that first threshold, that first target, must be high enough to where it's credible and meaningful and valued either by the employer or by the citizens of Alaska. Yet it must be realistic enough to where the people we're trying to incentivize, in this case our school employees, that they believe it's realistic and obtainable. There, the other piece of the research that was very clear is this model can fail if, in fact, the compensation is not great enough to induce a desire to change. There's probably a lot of thought right now thinking, my gosh, this could be considerable dollars on a statewide level. And when we address the fiscal note on this, I'll share what that looks like at different levels. But I think importantly, the way we've looked at this, remember, it's a no-risk benefit to the state, no performance, no cost. If, in fact, we had a large number of our schools and our school employees who met the highest level of compensation, I can't think of getting a greater return on our investment in education than that. What are the expected outcomes of this program? We expect increases in proficiency in reading, writing, and mathematics, those fundamental skills. We expect that we're going to see those fundamental skills addressed across grade levels and across content areas. We believe that they'll be actively seeking ways to enhance those fundamental skills so that the content, while they may not teach reading, writing, or mathematics, they know it's critical to share the information they have in their content area, and they know it's a target that they're teaming on as a school as a whole. We think it will create a school-wide ownership of student learning instead of being shared by not every staff member right now. I think that this is an incentive that encourages people to work differently than they have worked, to work with innovation, to do some real self-judgment on effective ways to deliver in their own schools. This is not about one process that will work in every school in the state, but this is about creating the environment so that each school, their entire staff, has a framework to develop a system that will work in their school and their community. It's about accountability. It clearly is about accountability. And there's an incentive there to help each child move wherever they're performing to a higher level of performance. And those that are performing high, to keep them performing high. When students understand how reading, writing, mathematics, or whatever the skills and content are, when they understand how it fits into life outside of the school and out of the classroom, they soon value it, and they become very good at it. This model would produce those kinds of outcomes, in my opinion. I think the last slide, one of the last slides, is very, very important. Why did other models fail? And whenever you say performance compensation or performance incentive, and you're talking about public schools, everybody instantly goes to the M word, merit pay. And merit pay has got more than 20 years of history to it. And it's, at best, had mixed results. We looked at why models worked in education and out of education, and we built this model trying to address every one of those reasons that those models failed. So it's very important. The first thing is that the models were not built on student growth. They failed. They failed because they weren't built on growth, which meant if you were a school or a teacher that happened to have high-performing kids, you automatically began with a great advantage. This one's built on growth. Doesn't matter where your kids perform, equal opportunity to raise them. It's the whole growth levels that, that level the playing field from school to school, student to student. Another reason that these fail, they're unrealistic targets. They were either too easy and not valued by the public or the lawmakers of that state, or they were too difficult, unobtainable, and people quit trying. Other models created conflict from one staff member to another staff member because they pitted one against one another. What we're inducing here is collaboration, shared responsibility, teamwork. This model is about bringing people together using expertise across the curriculum, across content area, and across grade level for a common target result. Other models fail because they didn't include the building administrator. This model includes the administrator and all staff. Other models fail because the instrument used wasn't reliable and wasn't applied consistently. Other models fail because the compensation wasn't large enough to bring about change, a desire to change, an incentive to do things differently. And finally, other models failed because there was a weak commitment on behalf of the program. They started, they may have worked great, there wasn't the commitment from either the employer or who was ever moving the program forward to continue that model. This model that we're proposing addresses every single one of the bullets of why other models failed. What lies ahead? Well, we'll set final targets on the value chart when we get the results in 2006. This April, we'll do the comparison. We'll go through a cut scoring process to fine-tune the numbers on the value chart to make sure that the baseline that's created is fair, consistent, and level. Once the program is adopted, and if adopted, then we can apply that whole incentive piece. It will be there. We have no past history of the impact of incentive on this program. So that's a bit of an unknown. If we've set the targets correctly, we think the incentive will be great. The cost of the program will vary from year to year because we don't know the impact of that incentive. I hope the cost of the program escalates. But I hope that it escalates because it's hitting substantial targets that are reflective of students achieving more than a year's worth of growth. Final recap on the key points. It's based on student growth, not on groups, not on a preconceived target. It empowers the expertise of the educators we have and includes all people in the school building, certified, non-certified. It's based on an understandable model that's easy to apply. Finally, this whole program is founded on a private sector proven strategy, and it's time that we apply some of those effective strategies to the public sector. I'll be happy to answer, I'm sure, the many questions you have.
Thank you, Commissioner. Senator Bundy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First, I'd like to applaud you for bringing this program forward. I am really excited about it, and I think it has great potential. And one thing I'd like to highlight is in my own experience, the need to include the entire staff. I as you know, my wife and I were at Careers in Education. I remember one school I served where the janitor would sweep up the halls and then sweep the dirt out of the door as the children were coming in from recess. On a regular basis, he would do that. And to me, the message was, you kids are screwing up my school. Get out of here. We don't want you around. Rather than, you kids are providing a job for me. So I think that is is so critical, and I've and also had experience where people like that can connect with students and give the students a friendly adult face after school. My question is all this computation of deciding individual growth, going from proficient minus to plus and hopefully on up, that would occur at the Department of Education?
Yes, sir, Senator Bundy, it would.
Is that going to be able to be done with current staff and resources, or is this going to require additional?
The calculation of applying what growth occurred school by school, I believe, would be able to be done with current staff. It gets expanded that if this program is moved forward, we're also taking the responsibility to, in fact, cut the actual checks, issue the 1099s, et cetera, on this compensation from the department. That will require some expansion of personnel in the department to accomplish that, particularly since timing will be very critical and we don't have a lot of lead time from the time the testing is taken to the computation, verification, and issue checks.
And one additional question, and just the level of compensation, I guess I'd like some information on how you chose these levels. Knowing how enamored the public is of a $1,000 PFD check, I assume $1,000 is significant, but have you done some research that...
We did some unofficial research, and that went through the process of a number of districts in the lower 48, not states per se. There's a number of states looking at different types of incentive programs, but there's a number of districts that are using a monetary compensation based on student growth and achievement. And we looked at the levels that they were offering for certain forms of achievement, and then we talked to those folks, how is it working? What are the weaknesses of your program? We kind of gauged it on what they were offering. There are states offering considerably more, districts offering considerably more for growth per teacher than even our highest level. And Les may help me, was it Little Rock, Arkansas? With it.
Yeah. My name's Les Morris. I'm Director of Assessment and Accountability at the department. We had one district, which was Little Rock, Arkansas, that paid as high as $8,000, but they generally, in the ones that we looked at, it was from $1,500 to $4,100 within that range somewhere.
The whole key there is I would hate to see this model move forward and fail because the incentive wasn't enough to change the behavior. Now, obviously, if the compensation is high and the behavior changes, the target must be commensurate with that level of compensation. So this cannot be a giveaway. It has to be obtainable.
Thank you.
Senator Wilkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, thank you for your presentation and your enthusiasm and vision. I think you've given us a skeleton here that we would all like to work on. And I appreciate the concept of investment. If we don't get back more than we put in, this will be nothing more than a tar baby that we'll never get rid of. So to that, I'm not interested in reinventing the wheel. To what extent is this plan that the skeleton you've handed us today, what extent is it modeled after others? And I guess I'm particularly talking about Colorado. They've been working on theirs, as it shows here, for some 6 years, and have committed a considerable amount of money through the ballot box, which is extraordinary. To what extent are we following Colorado or others so that we're not spinning our wheels, reinventing the wheel?
It follows the Colorado model to the extent that Colorado focuses on growth of students, but Colorado was limited to a single content area and only certain grade levels. It does not apply to all staff across the entire building, and it does not apply to all content areas. So to the extent that it looks at academic achievement by individual students, it follows that piece.
So is the plan you're presenting modeled after any other plan in the United States?
It is not, Senator Wilkin.
So we're plowing new ground. May I ask a couple of questions? If we go back to your value table, I don't know the slide number, but page 3 on ours. I don't understand, and maybe it's too much detail, but I don't understand why you would reward one that slipped from one category to another, which we do on the computing index. If you fall, you are rewarded 10 or 90 points. I guess it doesn't make a difference as long as you're measuring everybody by the same yardstick, but it's intuitively, it just doesn't make sense why you would reward going backwards. Am I reading that? And then you go ahead to the computing index, 4 sides ahead. Why does that work?
I'll try to answer your question, and I may ask for some assistance if I understand it correctly. If you have a score of 100, 100 means 1 year's worth of growth. So a student that gets a score of 100 did not make more than a year or less than a year. There is a scenario on the value table where a student would actually go previous year advanced and slip down to proficient and still get more than 100 points. Based on using our psychometricians, that phenomenon is called regression to the mean, where it's very difficult to hold a student at the highest levels consistently year after year, and approximately 2/3 of those students will move in and out of advanced proficient. So by keeping them advanced is worth more. You don't get a reduction per se of less than 100 because they move back to proficient. It's a statistical correction.
And that's why I was afraid, too much detail for maybe today. we'll come back and visit that one again. Is your because our testing has changed over the last couple of years, and we're really just getting into the new test, so to speak. Is your yardstick valid and reliable?
We've had...
Are we going to change the yardstick again, which would skew monetary rewards?
Thanks, Senator Wilkin. That's a great question. We don't have any plans to change that yardstick. We have now 2 independent evaluations that we were required to have under NCLB, and actually we've done yet a third one, and what those studies focused on, did our tools, our assessments, did they actually measure the standards and the grade level expectations that we have adopted in this state in reading, writing, and math, and were they aligned? In other words, was there vertical alignment? So what students do in third grade and what they're tested on, does it connect smoothly as they go to fourth, fifth, and sixth? All 3 of those studies say that this is a valid and aligned tool. Our plan is not to change that tool, is to be consistent. And it is important that this model compares current year to previous year. And beyond that, they're disconnected.
Can I go one more question?
Please.
Is there any way to model backwards? In other words, if this was in place today, What would have happened last year or the year before? Are we going to benefit the schools that need it?
We did ask our psychometricians to attempt to do that. And in fact, they provided that information to us, but there was one component that, of course, the results were missing, and that is the incentive piece wouldn't have been there from the past. But if, in fact, We did an equating from the old test using similar cut scores and equated it back, we would have had 19 schools for sure make the highest level of performance this last year. Under this value table, with those categories and doing the equating minus the incentive piece, we know we would have had 19 schools hit the highest level. As we've done this equating for a variety of reasons, having nothing to do with this. And what we have found, a state as a whole, we are relatively flat on student achievement as a state. Now, yes, we have more schools meeting AYP, and we have some schools that aren't flat that are truly growing. But as a state, we are relatively flat with student achievement over the past many years. So we're looking for a way to really jumpstart and different ways to increase achievement greatly.
I'm going to leave the big question to Senator Green because she's at the end of the table, and that's how much. So we'll get to that in a minute. But creeping up on that question, if we are plowing new ground, and this is not modeled after others, would you consider or would there be a place in your plan for a pilot of three school districts, big, medium, small, across the state that would sign on for a period of time to start this so that we don't dive in with a lot of money and become mired down in just the fact that you have to put in place the structure and people lose confidence in that turmoil and pretty soon we got ourselves a tar baby. Would you think about a pilot program if needed?
Senator Wilkin, I'm so strongly committed that this is going to make a difference for Alaska kids that I would be open to anything that allows an opportunity to see if it can be effective.
Would you contemplate that these awards, the monetary awards, would be subject to bargaining, to collective bargaining?
The way that we have tried to structure the bill language and the letter of intent is that, in fact, that these bonuses are strictly excluded from bargaining. They are excluded from TERS and PERS contributions and for the calculation that's used to determine the level of benefit through TERS and PERS.
Okay, Sam, and my last question, and it's kind of wild, but, you know, in my experience in small business and with my people that worked on a commission system, and it was probably I did a lot of stupid things in my business, but I did a few things that were right. One of them was the commission system. And I was absolutely amazed at, after the turmoil of putting it in place in the early 90s, the collaboration, the light in people's eyes, the incentive put in place for money, but it became more than that. It became more of their job to earn more money, but they found the benefit of not working harder, but working smarter, and reaching out to the retailer, reaching out to their fellow employee, to make their paycheck bigger. But it wasn't the money; it was the interaction among their sphere of people they saw every day, putting potato chips and bread on the shelves. So that gets me excited about something like this, but people respond more than to just money, and it's wild today, but sometime it may be that we involve the students to some level. And maybe the students at the end of a year, if they're at a advanced school, a proficient school, just get a medal. They get a pizza party. They get a bag that says 07, a super achiever. But we think maybe something about that, and that is peanuts. Peanuts, if you can light up their eyes on what they're trying to do. So I just throw that out as maybe another section of the bill someday, or some people in the future might want to add a student involvement, student component. So with that, I look forward to not having had the big question answered yet. I look forward to working with you, and I thank you for being here today.
Thank you, Senator.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The first simple question, the incentive dollar, is that just a one year, or does that get into the base of their salary?
Senator Hoffman, that is just for that year, does not affect their base salary or negotiated contract with the district.
Okay, and then the other question, I guess, to get away from super districts that are achieving, when we're acquired, there's a big turnover of teachers, and there's a lot of recruitment early on at the beginning of the year. When a teacher looks at coming to Alaska, they look at, you know, after this program's in effect, they look at which schools have received the bonuses. You know, obviously, they're not going to want to go to a school that has never achieved a bonus, and they're going to be attracted to those schools that have achieved one or more, because their chances of getting this bonus are better. And I wonder, how do you get away from, over time, certain schools acquiring the best and the brightest of the teachers, and the rest of the schools being left behind?
Thank you for your question. I think it's a valid one, and one that needs lots of answers and support. The first thing I think is very important is the value table itself. While I agree the scenario you describe, that there will be some schools that seem to consistently hit those high levels of achievement and schools that consistently don't, that is of great concern to me. But what I want to be able to do is make sure to demonstrate the reason those schools are hitting or not hitting isn't because there's an unfair playing field. And I would hope that at some point it would be initiated by parents, teachers, secretaries, students, to find out what the schools that consistently hit this level are doing that they might employ. I think that the performance incentive, I think you hit the nail on the head. We're looking at a national teacher shortage, and Alaska is going to be impacted by that more every year, as every state will be. This particular program has a chance to put Alaska in front as a way to attract, and with the mentoring program, I honestly believe the results we're getting there, a way to retain those folks. What we have to demonstrate is that the value and the process of this is fair, and that in fact there's no advantage to a school based on size, based on student population, based on location, that it is clearly driven by the work that's done within the members of that school.
But that, you know, doesn't completely answer the question, because if we're trying to attract people with this incentive program, more people are going to come to Alaska. That's what we're trying to do. But then, if they're really motivated by the incentive of money, they're going to want to take the next level and improve their chances of even making more money by looking at those schools over time that have achieved the bonus. And that's going to leave, within Alaska, that's going to leave certain school districts or certain schools behind that learning curve, and the brightest of the teachers are going to be attracted to those schools that have made the most marks on the achievement or recruitment. And how do you level that playing field? Do you say we're going to go into the NFL and we're going to, teachers can't pick their school, they're going to get allotted schools, draft for the schools?
I think we do a lot of things before we got to the draft concept, and clearly one of them is as schools, in fact, rise to the top, and I'm confident they will because we have some great educators in the state, as they rise to the top and consistently do that, one, we ought to be gathering the data for what it is that they're doing that gives those results, and we ought to be offering that to schools that aren't hitting the mark to see if we can change the results there. Your point's a valid one. I haven't gotten down the road that far. I'm just confident that there isn't an advantage because of location or size. But you're right. There is history that could result in advantage, at least perceived advantage.
Because a teacher's going to want to go to the New Orleans, not go to the New Orleans team, they're going to want to go to the Seattle Seahawks team.
Senator Dyson.
Commissioner, amongst the several things that have made me enthusiastic about you having this job is the what you produced in your immediate responsibility before this, which, as I understand it, was a small school district with very scattered schools with significant logistics problems.
seems to me what you're doing here is a further extension of what you did when you were wearing that hat. Can you kind of give us a little sketch of what you did and what the results were there, and if indeed some of the problems that Senator, previous speaker mentioned came up?
Thank you, Senator Dyson. Correct, and I kind of avoided the question a little bit on going there with Senator Wilkins' question. I have had some experience applying this concept. It was a small district in Alaska, but it was remote. And basically what we did there is we identified what was valued by the stakeholders. And reading, writing, and mathematics were in that list. There were other things. We determined as a total staff, a district staff, how we could measure to know if we're making progress on that. And then we determine the targets. What's enough progress? And we set some compensation, some performance compensation incentives. And we either were successful as an entire district or we missed the boat as an entire district. And we applied that concept not only to student performance, but we applied it to our health insurance costs and how to reduce those and contain those. And money that we saved, we offered back an incentive that everybody shared some responsibility for that. So the concept that was around this did work there. We moved from an entire district then to having goals and targets for schools. And finally, when I left the district, we were down to individual teachers. That's not the direction I would move necessarily. But what that did, that was forced by individual teachers. They wanted team goals, district goals. They wanted school goals, but they also wanted some individual benchmarks to hit. So it worked there for the same reasons that are incorporated in this model. It worked because they knew what the target was. It wasn't going to move on them. Two, they believed that the method of measurement was fair and consistent and reliable, and they felt like the level of achievement was obtainable and reachable. They did exactly what Senator Hoffman is concerned about. When they weren't getting the results they wanted, there was a team feeling there. And this was clearly the Seahawks. Because they would call their peers in another school and they would say, "What are you doing? I'm struggling with this. I can't get my kids to do this or this." They actually opened up the responsibility. They shared it. They collaborated, and the fact that it wasn't just so much available that you would be reluctant to share that with a colleague because they might get there before you got there, here was the target. We wanted 100% of our folks to get there, that they were open about sharing what was working, what wasn't working.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senator
Stedman. Yes, Madam Chair. Kind of curious. Understanding is the superintendents would be excluded and the principals would be included. Is that correct? And can you elaborate on it?
Yeah, Senator Stedman, thank you. We feel it's absolutely critical that the person who is supposed to be in charge and organizing the school be included in this. They must be part of this because if it requires the way they schedule the day, build the daily schedule, move kids around, prioritize key instructional time, principal must be involved. I met with superintendents conceptually about this program, and then I pulled five or six superintendents from around the state that I've been working with for a year about, what do you think of this? And what are some things that must be present for this to work? And what are some weaknesses of this concept? And it was out of those discussions they felt that superintendents should not be included in the compensation piece. They felt like it might send the wrong message. They felt like that is the one individual that normally negotiates a totally separate contract directly with the school board than other employee groups. So it came from superintendents that they should be excluded from this compensation. While they supported it conceptually, the concept, very supportive, they thought it might taint it.
That's it.
Any further questions? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Good morning, Commissioner.
Good morning.
One of the things that I see, that at least from this program, is that if you have an incentive based situation, motivated students certainly are going to be out there, but the students that really seem to have trouble are those that are less than motivated. In fact, if you talk to the average person out there, and they say the difficulty with the public school system is the discipline. Discipline is not there, it's not exhibited by those low achieving students. I don't see anything in this program that actually addresses the disciplinary problem that is so rampant within
There's a lot of indirect inferences contained in here. Some of the core values is to keep this credible and reliable, we wanted to make the components in this elements that the school staff had control of, one. Otherwise, it's deemed unfair, not reachable. Well, we can't control whether or not the parent has a good attitude or it was cold that day. We tried to keep what basis movement on those elements or components that staff can control within the school. While at the same time, we know that if you have strong parent support and good communication, the chances of that student achieving are great. To back to your point on discipline, it clearly is an issue. And it's going to be an issue whether we have an incentive or no incentive. We still have responsibility for those schools and those kids to achieve or not achieve. We have schools where we have misbehaving children that do achieve. And we have schools that have misbehaving children that don't achieve. We have schools where kids behave very well, and as a whole, the school doesn't achieve. Our thought here in the indirect inference is that rather than have you as the fifth grade teacher that have some discipline problem students in your classroom, while you may be very successful at dealing with them or miserably failing working with them, the chances of us as a whole school coming together where we all have an interest in those students behaving to a level that they can achieve and not impact the achievement of those around them, we all have a vested interest in that occurring. In the schools where there's misbehaving children that still achieve, one of the common links is there's a consistent policy on appropriate student behavior that is enforced in the classroom and out of the classroom by all staff. Those schools that have done that have done it on their own because they saw value in it. This incentive provides a reason to really come together as a staff and figure out how to motivate those students. The other thing is here, we're measuring individual student growth. Those kids are probably acting out for a reason. My guess is it's either not challenging in those classrooms or it's too challenging and becoming frustrating. This really encourages staff to come together and figure out how do we meet the needs of those misbehaving children to engage them in a more positive way.
Madam Chairman, actually my question wasn't so much a disciplinary question, wasn't so much whether they have a misbehaving student. It was just the discipline to get up in the morning, the discipline to go to study hall at night, the discipline to go ahead and make sure that you're going to be doing your homework as opposed to going to basketball practice. We all know about the misbehaving students. A number of us here have been in that category a time or two ourselves. And so it's something we can identify with. It's the other thing that I was, other aspect that I was trying to get a handle on.
Senator Olson, I'd almost go back to the same concept, though, is joined together as a whole, we need to figure out what we can do so that you do have the discipline to get to school on time and that you do go to study hall and you do maintain those grades. And when we engage everybody, if I'm your teacher, I may not have been able to build that rapport with your parents or with you individually, but maybe the secretary or the custodian or that high school English teacher has.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
You bet. Thank you, Senator. Are there other questions for the commissioner? We will look forward to the fifth promotion and the anticipation.
Come on.
No, I did have a couple of questions. On is there a factor or some kind of exemption or waiver for those students who don't attend a full year or who are kind of in and out or and are that very I can't recall the phrase used, very critically impacted student whose level of achievement is never going to be terribly high, you know, and but we have them in the public school and we deal with them. Is there a factor for considering those students in the calculation?
Senator Green, yes, ma'am, I think you're probably referring to intensive students, probably. And even those students we're expecting some growth from, and since it's based on where they began previous year, even though it might be very minimal. Would you help me with the first part of your question, please?
It was the transient students,
yes.
The part-year students.
We will be able to treat students that move from school to school the same way that we treat them now under determining AYP. Full academic year.
Okay.
Yes, thank you. On earlier conversation, I thought that this program could be implemented under your current budget without additional funding. Is that no longer the case, or is it possible to still move forward? Or did I misunderstand?
This could be implemented without additional funding if no schools met a performance level.
I think the conversation was about additional employees at the department.
Yeah. No, this was in a conversation last summer that
I
misunderstood. Obviously, we don't want to institute a program that we save money on by not having any achievement.
Right. I think that a number of the committee members probably want to know, you know, what do we think the fiscal note looks like? And again, not knowing the degree the incentive will work, we did a range. If 5% of the employees reach the highest level in the state, it's a $3 million fiscal note. If 25% of employees certified and classified around the state met the highest level, it's about $15.4 million on the fiscal note.
Thank you. And that, of course, brings to mind the governor's comments last night. And as he's proposing $90 million, I bet you could find 15 within that 90. I'm not real good at math, but I think that would work.
You think it would? Okay, Senator Wilkins.
Commissioner, what's the next thing in a row here? When do we expect to see something formal?
Senator Wilkin, what we wanted to do was vent this out to legislators, secure feedback, which we've got some excellent feedback today, and areas that we need to look for appropriate responses on. The detail in this, if in fact supported by this legislature, the detail to move it forward is probably best designed through regulation, the very specific detail. So if the legislature has specific areas that they want us to come forward with, we'll be happy to do that. It's almost conceptually, since we will not have a final value table until probably May or June of 06, when we have comparing 06 and 05 statewide assessments.
I guess, and the governor made light last night of it, I'm not sure he was kidding, but if indeed we have a gas line contract coming to us, I don't want to be here in June talking about gas. I don't want to be here in April talking about gas. So I would just, from my perspective, to get this moving sooner than later, because we may not be talking about a traditional 120-day session here anticipating a gas contract. So if you want something done, we need to get on it forthwith. Thank you.
Senator Stedman.
This kind of backs up a little bit to Senator Bundy's question. in the notes that we're talking about the $15 million to maybe the $25 million cost, and it might be beneficial to, when we get further down the line and start looking at that, that we relate that in as a percentage to the base student allocation, some form of caps, but we'll deal with that later on.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess, what do you think the education community would rather see, an increase in the base student allocation or this this program, this experiment?
Senator Hoffman, I think it would depend greatly on who you talk to. I think you're going to hear both. I know that I've spent some time talking to a number of educators, and they would like an opportunity to have a target and incentive out there. And there are clearly those that would rather see it go into their school, and there are those that would rather see it go into the district via the formula. There's mixed messages out there.
Are there other questions? Thank you very much, Commissioner. These are very well done. Tomorrow morning, we will have a Senate Finance at 9 a.m. We'll be considering the methamphetamine and marijuana people. And at 4 p.m. today, at 4 p.m. today, the exact schedule for tomorrow will be posted, the agenda. So, Senator Wilson, anything to add for the good of the order?
Thank you.
With that, we're adjourned.